You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Big time, record breaking. That's what describes this week on the Penn State Hoops show, because Penn State basketball played in an electric big time game early in the week and then set some records late in the week. Nate Bauer, he's going to break it all down, the premier basketball insider on the Hoops show. Welcome to the Penn State Hoop Show. I'm T. Frank. That's Nate Bauer. Nate, do you like, you're kind of an aw shucks guy. Like, you kind of have this perpetual sort of like, you're very humble. Do you like it when I pump you up as basketball insider reporter extraordinaire Nate Bauer?
It gives me good? Pause. Yeah, it gives me pause. I'm not going to say that I don't appreciate some level of recognition for paying attention to Penn State basketball. But yeah, no, it's, you don't have to say that.
Well, it's true. I mean, I would not say it if it weren't true. The number one thing about selling is believe in what you're selling. And I believe in you. I believe in the show. I'm glad we're here today after an up and down, busy, topsy-turvy, headline-making week. You are the center of all of it. So tell me, let's start with the Palestra game. Let's get into that. You were there. You talked about the atmosphere and what to expect. Was it what you expected?
Yeah, let's call it a down and up week for Penn State basketball.
Nice.
Right? The Palestra game, Penn State obviously hosting really the number one team in the country and Purdue out in Philadelphia. And it was everything that Penn State could have hoped that it would be, right? I mean, genuinely, the crowd, the atmosphere, the anticipation, it was a who's who of kind of Penn State people, right? Everybody was there. Pat Kraft was there. Calvin Booth was there. His son, Kerry, was there. Board of Trustees members, you kind of name it. And a lot of Penn State, even Anthony Poindexter and Jaywon Sider were there. So, like, it was just sitting courtside. And I'm sure for anybody else...
It's like a Lakers game.
It literally was.
Famous people, but in Philadelphia.
It was very much that. It was everyone who has something to do with Penn State in a big way just seemed to be there at this game. There was a ton of anticipation and very clearly a ton of Penn State fans. So, I mean, the one thing that I would say is just for anybody who's been to a whiteout football game and feels that surge when something happens and the crowd, you can like feel that pulsing and certainly the noise level, the decibel level, it is all of that because it's such a small space. It's such a small space, and you pack 8,700 people in there. It feels larger than life. And they had that right for the first half of that game. Penn State basketball was able to elicit so many of those moments. I mean, they hung right with them. 37-31 in the first half. Penn State's up 6 points. Zach Edey was kind of getting his, but it wasn't as though Purdue was just doing anything that they wanted. And Penn State was making some spectacular plays along the way. So it was really set up to be
a showdown in the second half, right?
A showdown in the second half and an opportunity for Penn State.
So what was the difference? Because it did not happen that way. And I think the basic kind of response is, well, Penn State stopped shooting as effectively, but there's more that goes into it, right?
Yeah. No, I think it was a combination of factors, right? They did not shoot well. Andrew Funk could not get loose. Andrew Funk could not find his shot. Jalen Pickett really went off in the first half and just, they bottled him up in the second half. So the offense really just was not able to kind of click the way that it wanted to. And I think defensively, Penn State just had no real answer for Zach Edey. Like that, that was the thing that was overwhelming. It's important to contextualize this and say, like, Purdue, like, really beat Penn State up in the second half. Like, they were the much better team in the second half. Penn State, you know, was able to do enough things to seem very competitive in the first half, but in the second half, they just didn't have those same elements, and it really showed.
Yeah, and it was going to have to be a perfect game, right? It was going to have to be a situation where Penn State was playing its best, and in the second half, when complimentary guys for the Boilermakers are going off, like, you're not going to be able to contend with two things. You knew Edey was going to get a lot of points. You knew that there was going to be an answer there. But when things started to lapse other places, that's where it kind of snowballed from my perspective.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely the case. And when you're stagnant offensively, which is something that happened, and, you know, we're going to touch on it here in a minute. When you're stagnant offensively and have no answers for what they're doing on the other end of the floor, it just was too much. And you know, it kind of went from a 6-point game in Penn State's favor to a 10-point game in Purdue's favor, really in not that much time, right? I mean, Purdue was really able to wipe away that lead immediately out of the gates in the second half, and it just never felt competitive from there on out.
I'm the two games are kind of blurring together along with the Michigan game. Turnovers an issue in this game as well? Because it felt like there wasn't a lot of consistency from Penn State, which I think we've touched on, but Penn State, a lot of unforced errors, it felt like. You had, like I said, you had to play a very good game. They were, and then things kind of shifted.
Yeah, I don't know if turnovers were like a huge problem. I mean, they finished with 9. That's a hair above, I think, where they like to be. Certainly they like to be in that like 6 to 8 kind of range. So
okay,
a little bit, but also, you know, Purdue just got what it wanted. Right?
Yeah,
Purdue just got what it wanted. It wasn't as though it was like this dominating in transition. Everything is out of control. It was very much a matter of Penn State just couldn't shoot. They just didn't shoot the ball very well in the second half, and a part of that, a big factor, was the fact that Micah Shrewsbury talked about it after the game, that they felt as though the officiating, in a way, took them out of what they wanted to do completely, right? There are things that they are looking for from officiating crews in terms of, like, how Penn State plays basketball, the style of basketball that they play. And I asked him about it.
We play so different than a lot of other people in the league. Right, so the fouls I'm asking for are different, right? Like Matt Painter's asking for fouls in the post on Zach Edey's post up before he catches the ball, after he catches the ball, things like that. I'm asking for fouls on the perimeter, right? We're trying to post. Jalen Pickett's getting into the post and he's scoring a lot. He's not getting the fouls he deserves. He's getting fouled. Like, dudes are jumping on him, they're wrapping him around, they're making it hard for him to throw in the post. Gotcha. But, like, on the perimeter, we cut, we move everything else. And if you can put your hands on us, you slow us down, you take away what we want to do. So, like, understand that, right? Like, come into the game and study that and know, like, oh, this is how Penn State plays. This is how Purdue plays. This is what they're looking for. This is what they're looking for. And maybe they do, right? They are good officials. But, like, I don't know. I'm frustrated.
So, is it style of officiating, like, guys look for certain things and they're maybe more keyed into fouls in the post where it's congested and guys are getting their hands in, or is it more about something else?
I think it's that. Is a lot of the conversation that we're having this season is, how is Penn State possibly going to match up against these bigs, right?
Right.
And Zach Edey didn't get to the free throw line either, and he takes a ton of free throws. So I think that the notion that it was a poorly officiated game in the first place, that there were more fouls by a wide margin than what were actually called, is warranted. It's valid, right? I mean, they just more or less said, hey, we're going to let you play. There were some things that were inconsistent from the first half to the second half, some fouls that were called on Penn State early in the second half that I think really rubbed them the wrong way. But overall, it's, hey, he's not Jalen Pickett's in the post constantly.
Yes.
Micah Shrewsbury is not looking for him to get those fouls. Now, he's being fouled and he belongs at the free throw line. There's a reason for that. But yeah, the bigger thing that hurts Penn State is when guys, when opponents are tugging at Andrew Funk's shirt or Seth Lundy's shirt,
right,
and slowing them down on all of the perimeter action that they're trying to run, which you see, right? Like, I mean, we've come to identify this. We know what this Penn State offense is supposed to look like in year two of Micah Shrewsbury. It can't happen when those right. things are occurring really every trip down the court. So yeah, the fact that Purdue was able to do that, I just think it totally took them out of their rhythm. And the fact that the officials called not like defenses will change their approach. Defenses will change what their habits are if they're yeah. racking up touch fouls. Right. And that just didn't happen.
So it's kind of like style of officiating is funny because your officiating should be officiating, right? But like I said before, certain officials seem to call one thing more than the other. So because it was a kind of a gritty game that did not work to Penn State's movement and efficiency and ball movement and screens and things like that. So as much as the mismatch was from Purdue, the mismatch was with the officiating crew, it sounds like, is kind of the picture we're painting here.
A little bit, right? Like, that's the important thing to note here is right. a little bit. It was a factor. There were, what's James Franklin's line? It's everything, right? Is it was Penn State not playing defense at the level that it needed to. It was Penn State's offense not helping itself by being stagnant and really crowding the floor. Mike Shrewsbury talked about it on Wednesday night after the Indiana game. They didn't move. And so you're watching your teammates dribble the ball, basically. And when there's no action around them, the ball sticks. The ball sticks, yep. and they're not yep. doing any of the things that they like to do. So yes, those things combined with the officiating the way that it was, and certainly – you know, Micah Shrewsbury's point of, hey, they're expecting one thing because this is Big Ten basketball and we're something else. Right. I think it was a good one. And I think it was one, ultimately, we can get to this later, carried through. The message resonated. The crew that worked the Indiana game on Wednesday night, I'm sure that they were aware of it. I'm sure Micah Shrewsbury, even though he said he didn't, on Monday, I'm sure at some point he heard from the league office. I'm sure that there was a back and forth there. I don't know what the fine was. Like, yeah.
Is there a fine? Did he reach into his pocketbook to make that point?
I would be surprised if there wasn't. And I would say it's the best money that he spent this year if he did.
Yeah. But that wasn't the only thing he had to say, you know, because there was a lot of stuff. And by the way, if you want to check that out, Nate is going to these press conferences and getting this audio that you can hear for yourself. Check it out, BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. If you're watching the Hoops podcast, we're trying to grow this show on YouTube. We have an insanely awesome out-of-the-gate group of people that love the show on our podcast version. So as always, give a 5-star review for the show. We appreciate that. But if you're here on the YouTube channel, make sure you like the video and you subscribe to Blue White Illustrated. You know, as much as like I focus on football, I don't want this to be just a one-note channel. I want us to be able to do more and have cool conversations about basketball and a bunch of other things. So please, when we try some new stuff, please support the channel. And that you do that by liking the video and subscribing to Blue White Illustrated. So now that we got that out of the way, Micah Shrewsbury did have more comments, especially challenging his players. So set up what we're about to hear next.
Yeah, it was on Monday. He really more or less out of that Purdue game. Sometimes there's a reset, right? When guys are critical, when coaches are critical of their team and the immediate aftermath of a game, if guys are hot, there's competition. It brings out that side of coaches. Naturally, they want to win. Sometimes, I would argue probably a lot of times, they're able to sleep on it, reconvene whenever it is the next time they see the media, and the tone softens a little bit. Yep. The tone did not soften. The tone did not soften for Micah Shrewsbury when he addressed the media on Monday.
Just more mature, right? Like doing what we need him to do in certain moments, right? Different games, different moments call for different things. Sometimes it's scoring. Sometimes it's defense. Sometimes it's leadership. Sometimes it's poise. Right? That's what a senior brings. Right? If you look at a scale of college basketball, right, as a freshman, you want to play. As a sophomore, you want to start. As a junior, you want to be all conference. As a senior, you want to win. And you do whatever it takes to win. That's number one, and it should be number one, you know, on these guys' minds.
That is an awesome quote. That is phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he really put it to his seniors. He really put it to those guys to change the trajectory of what was going on, because I'm not going to say that it was spiraling at two games, right? You lost two games. You won, right. you won the game on New Year's Day against Iowa, but you've had two games in a row where I think they had not played to the level of expectation that he has. And again, like, you don't want to get carried away by losing to the number one team in the country.
Right.
That's you can live with that. That's okay. It's how you play that impacts the perception from him personally, how he's evaluating things. And certainly what you ended up seeing was Monday and Tuesday of this week were really tension filled. I would describe it was probably not all that pleasant to be a Penn State basketball player on Monday and Tuesday this week.
So what do you mean by that? How does that work? I know that this is kind of a basic question, but
yeah,
what do you mean?
Okay, so a couple of things. One is, and this is, feels kind of gossipy, it shouldn't. I hung out after the media session on Monday. A couple other reporters did too. It's something that happens, right? We were invited to stay and catch a couple of minutes of practice, B-roll, whatever.
Yeah.
The environment, I would describe it as like the Thunderdome. Okay. They had a specific drill set up where it was literally toss the ball. They had lines of offense and lines of defense, three lines, right? Both wings and then somebody in the middle. And it was one-on-one basketball. So the charge was get a stop, right? Whoever it was, one-on-one basketball. And you know, you had guys like Mikey Henn and Kemba Jai basically wrestling on the floor for the ball. you had shouting. I mean, it was intense. It was a very competitive, challenging type. Right, you're not just saying like, oh, execute this certain drill. It's, hey, I'm putting you up against another man. Show me what, like, win the rep. Yeah. And so it was just different. It was different from I think the typical environment that you see at a Penn State basketball practice, to the point where we were kind of asked to leave. Maybe a little more abruptly than we normally, you know, typically right. It's a, hey, okay, guys, like, all right, enough's enough. No, this one was like, hey, you guys got to go, like, right now, get out.
Yeah.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Right.
Get out.
It seemed to pay off, though, you know, looking at the next game and some of the things that happened in that game. It looked like a different team at times. Penn State wins 85-66 over Indiana. Your thoughts on that transition?
Yeah, I thought that basically everything that Micah Shrewsbury asked for after the game on Sunday came to fruition, right? He challenged the want, the winning mentality of his seniors. Yeah. His seniors played extremely well against Indiana. He challenged the effort overall of his team, right? The defensive intensity, the gritty side of things that they're looking for. He really put that to the test in the locker room. He did it with the media. He did it in practice, you name it. But all of those things were called into question, and they played that way. They played yeah. one of their better defensive efforts, certainly of the Big Ten season. And calling out the officials,
right?
Calling out the things that they were looking for, ended up, it was subtle. I'm not sure how many people saw it or were necessarily paying attention to it. I was looking for it.
Yeah.
But some of the touch fouls that Indiana was called for in both the start of both halves, it wasn't just one half. It wasn't just the start of the game. It was the start of both halves. Indiana picked up a couple of those touch fouls on the perimeter.
Yeah.
And it opened the floodgates to a certain extent. They were able to run their action that they were looking for.
You couldn't, if you didn't know it was about the fouls and the change in the type of defense, you saw the result, because it was not, like I said, it was night and day. Ball movement, guys had space. They were like, it looked so different than it had the last couple games.
Yeah, and so the way that it manifests itself was 9 3-pointers in the first half, 9 3-pointers in the second half. They had 18 threes. That ties a program record that they set earlier this year, right? It was just Seth Lundy had it going, and then Andrew Funk had it going, and then Andrew Funk kept it going, like bridging the first half and the second half, and Seth Lundy kind of finished it off, right? It was all this. You could see the dominoes falling of, okay, because of this, this is now possible. Because this is now possible, Jalen Pickett, who really was kind of quiet for the first, I would say, 30 minutes of the game in terms of his scoring, that opened up for him a little bit. Cam Winter played one of his better games of the season.
More so guys right there, got into the lane. Like on itself, more guys were able to access the lane. It wasn't just Pickett, you know, driving for 2 minutes and backing a guy down.
Which is what happens when you're making 3-pointers, right?
Yep.
So, it does not seem... Now look, there were a bunch of guys that played well. I thought Kevin actually had one of his better games, and I thought Evan Mahaffey had an excellent game. He had 12 points.
He's fun.
He is fun.
Yeah.
He is fun.
Sorry, I didn't mean to ruin the flow. I just got excited.
I would just draw attention to the fact that primarily the seniors were the guys who went off. They popped off last night. They had a great game. And I thought that was a big sentiment that, you know, carried through for Penn State.
Just quickly on Mahaffey, he reminds me, and I got a sense of this early, but it just seeing the way he played yesterday, a little bit of Jamari Wheeler. And I know that, like, you know, Penn State basketball fans are spitting at the ground
yeah.
you know, thinking about Jamari Wheeler, but like his defensive disruption and creativity, it's obviously very different because he's that bouncy athletic guy who has lots of length and size, but the intensity, the effort, and kind of the crazy ass plays he can make. And you know, the speed Jamari had was the way he did that, poking the ball out from behind and jumping in passing lanes and being incredibly disruptive is what I saw from Mahaffey. Is that a fair comparison? Is that a role he can have as this season goes on?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one, just because typically people go body to body, right? That's the type of players that they compare people to. So I'm intrigued by you going in that direction. But the first word that Micah Shrewsbury uses to describe Mahaffey is energy. So if that's the case, if he is a ball of energy, and I mean, certainly that fits to what Wheeler did. A guy who plays tough, a guy who's kind of learning on the fly, he's trying to figure it out there. You could see it happening in real time. You could see him trying to like get it, but that's not, it's great when he does get it. But also, that's not the only way that he can impact the game. He can just be out there with his presence, with his length, and impact the flow of the game on really both ends of the floor. So I think that the, you know, kind of the setup that we were talking about in October and November about Mahaffey being a guy who, given a little bit of runway, could kind of force his way into playing time. I think you're seeing that. I think that's something that's definitely coming to fruition at this point in the season. And you're only going to see more, right? Is the more comfort he gets, the better he feels out there on the floor, the more he understands, the more playing time that he's going to get, because he does bring it really every time that he's on the floor.
Yeah. And it helps out down with the thickness, Miles Dredd down in the paint, right? So like, he doesn't have to be the only guy down there causing havoc for the other team. You know, you put, I'm stealing your thunder here, but Trayce Jackson Davis did not have a fun day because of the defensive intensity.
Yeah, he did some nice things. I thought that he had probably the best game of anybody for Indiana. Hood Schifino had a really nice game in terms of his efficiency at times, and then it kind of, I think it fell off. It really, honestly, like things kind of deteriorated. This is not, I don't think, a great Indiana team, and it's reflected in their record. They're lost three in a row now. But yeah, Penn State took advantage of that. And a big part of that was being able to be tough, be secure defensively, be strong defensively, both in the paint and elsewhere.
I can sense we've got a time limit here, but just quickly, Penn State's through this gambit that we talked about that you outlined at Christmas. So how they do and what comes next?
Yeah, at 3-3 in the Big Ten right now, genuinely, and would they love more? Would they love to be 4-2? Absolutely. Is some of it dictated by the trajectory of the opponents that they're facing? Absolutely. But you're going to take it. You're going to take 3-3 with an opportunity to get to 4-3 when they face Wisconsin. They have a break. Like that's the biggest thing right now is they get some time off. They don't play again until next Tuesday night. And they've played some of what I would describe as, you know, has Illinois had a great start to the season, to the Big Ten season? No. Has Indiana? No. But Purdue's really good. Michigan State is really on the rise. Mm-hmm. Michigan has played well. And so Penn State is kind of finding itself in where it wants to be, right? Which is the middle of the pack. Just be in the middle of the pack. Be in the middle of the pack. And that's going to take you a long way in the Big Ten. So
be in the upper middle of the pack, because we've seen Penn State fluctuate between the lower middle of the pack that can fight with everybody every night, but ultimately they don't get as many as they want, and where they are, and it feels where they're going to be with Mike Shrewsbury, is in the upper middle of the pack, where it's like, okay, you're knocking on the ceiling.
Yeah.
And maybe once in a while you're going to break through.
Yeah. I think it's kind of interesting, because he said on Wednesday night how, I mean, he more or less described feeling as though he was acting in a way that he didn't like, right? He talked about being so stressed out, and every win and loss and everything that happened every day, like dictating his, just feeling like he was living on the precipice of like a nervous breakdown almost, right? Like just everything was so momentous and important. And guess what? He's not wrong. Like that feeling isn't wrong. Everything that happens in this league dictates the next thing that happens, right? You cannot afford to put yourself into a deep hole. We've seen this traditionally with Penn State basketball, where Penn State loses a bunch of games and then plays strong down the stretch, but it's always too little too late.
Right.
You can't afford to do that. You have to be able to rebound. You have to be able to avoid lengthy losing streaks. And if you can build yourself a little bit of cushion in the process and put together a couple of winning streaks, even better. It works out much better for you. So yeah, I think it's an interesting moment for them right now. 3-3, you're going to take it. You're going to be, you know, not overjoyed, but you're going to understand that you're very much still a part of the conversation, and you can reach, excuse me, some of the aspirations that you have for the end of the season. He talked about it. He talked about it on Wednesday night. He said, we plan on playing through the end of March.
Well, that'll give us lots of stuff to talk about. Quick recap here, 12-5 overall, 3-3 in conference. You'll take that, as you said. Neutral site, 2-1. But, of course, the away games, 1-2. As you always say, you got to hold serve at home. They're 9-2 at home. They got a couple back. Can they get a couple more? Can they get that momentum going? Any last thoughts as we head into, as you said, a little bit of a break for Penn State football or basketball? Dang it, I did it. Penn State basketball here to end the show.
Yeah, I think that the next two – I'm going to say this every podcast. The next two games are really critical.
Yeah, when are they not? That's what we just said. When are they not?
you can lose at Wisconsin. Penn State is very comfortable losing at Wisconsin. It happens all the time.
And in ugly ways.
Weird ways. They had a one-point game last year. It doesn't matter. Last year does not matter. But point being, okay, forget game planning. I'm just saying Wisconsin poses challenges, right?
Yeah.
Then you get Nebraska back at the Bryce Jordan Center, and I genuinely think there should be a crowd for that game. It's a Saturday game at 2:15 in the afternoon, the day after a wrestling match at the Bryce Jordan Center, which is going to bring a lot of people into town on Friday night against Michigan. So combine those two elements, and Penn State has a bunch of Sunday home games. They have three more Sunday Big Ten home games, which is fine. Yeah. But if we're being honest and realistic about what suits people coming into town for the weekend, it's Saturday. Saturday afternoon games. It gives you your best chance to bring in a crowd. And certainly I think that they're hoping for it against Nebraska on the 21st of January.
Yeah, and a lot of people who are going to be at that game listen to the show, so make sure you say hi to Nate. Make sure when you see him up in the press row, you give him a wave. Come into town, grab a bite to eat, say hi to Nate. That'll make everyone happy. That'll do it for the Hoop Show. Coming to a close. We'll be back next week, as always. Nate, do you want to set a time? You want to set a date for next week? You want to do this Wednesday after the game?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I think Wednesday sounds great, actually.
So that's going to be how we do this. You got to listen to the show so that you know when the next podcast comes out. That's how we're handling it, because basketball changes every week. You know, we can't keep a necessarily as consistent of a schedule as some of our other shows and some of the other rhythms of the show. But we will be coming out on Wednesday with the Hoop Show. I'm Thomas Frank Carr. That is Nate Bauer. Thanks to his kids, by the way, for not coming over and being good children. So appreciate them very much. Very, very much. We'll talk to you next week on the Hoop Show.